Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. This is Johnny Calloway with Morph Into a New You, and author of Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man. And I'm really excited about our show today. Of course, I'm pretty easily excited. But this group, this conversation that we're about to have, I'm really happy with the two people I'm having this with today. We have Kristen Sonanta Walker and Christine Cannonville. And what we're going to do first, I'm going to have Kristen introduce herself and tell us a little bit about herself, and then we'll do the same thing with Christine, and then we're going to give you a show. Kristen, how about it?
Fantastic. Thank you, Johnny. And I just want to say, because Christine is a longtime friend of mine, it's Christine Louis de Cannonville, and she's all the way from Dublin, Ireland, joining us this morning. But I am the CEO of Mental Health News Radio Network, which is a network of podcasts from different people with terrific voices all over the world, including Johnny's. And I have my own podcast called Mental Health News Radio.
Great. Christine, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, everybody. I'm delighted to be here with you all the way from Dublin. I'm a psychotherapist in Ireland. I don't have a grand thing like you two with my, I don't have a podcast. So I'm delighted to be on yours. I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm kind of known for working with victims of narcissistic abuse.
Incredible. Incredible. I know that's a big job and helps a lot of people. So, Christine, first I would like to ask you what your definition of spirituality is.
Okay. For me, spirituality is an important and complex concept, really. I see it about being about connectedness. Connectedness to self, to other, to super consciousness, to the higher power, God, whatever you want to call it. And then it's also about transcendence, so going beyond the self to that of others and giving meaning to your life and reaching higher levels of consciousness. That's what it is for me.
Great. Kristen?
I don't see how I could beat what Christine just said, so I'm going to say ditto.
I like it. Just okay, so we'll just go for the rest of the show. We can each just keep saying ditto. So, well, I know for me, spirituality, I started my path into that through the 12 steps of Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous. And in the beginning, when I first came off of the streets, I was told that my vocabulary and my understanding of the English language could be put in a thimble. And that if I was going to do the 12 steps of those fellowships, that I was going to need a dictionary. And in our 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening. And when I looked up spiritual in the dictionary, it said to be of spirit. So I'm like, okay, so what does spirit mean? And this is where it started my path. Because when I looked up spirit in the dictionary, it said the very essence of man. Mm. That tied into what Christine was just saying about the connectedness, because in that place of understanding that the essence of all of us is spirit. It didn't say the essence of some men. It said the very essence of men, of man. And so that started me down a trail of trying to find the similarities in all of us. And that similarity is, for me, we are all a child of God, no matter how much we're responding and reacting to life from a place of fear. And we are all love. Some of us do a very good job of hiding that love.
Right.
But that is what connects us. And that love, because it was of God, it is of God, is always there. It's just sometimes really hidden. Hope that makes sense. But that's what it is for me. Mm-hmm. So, Christine, what has been your path? What has brought you to the conclusions that you've come to about spirituality?
My path began very, very young. Born in Ireland, Roman Catholic. But I have to say that for me today, true spirituality begins where religion ends.
Nice.
That's probably taking your breath away.
Yeah. I want you to elaborate on that a little bit.
Okay, well, it's always connected to religion. And straight away, you're going to now exclude anyone who is atheist or doesn't have a religion as such. So I actually think that religion divides us. Now, having said that, I have got a degree in theology and I am a theologian. So I have studied comparative religions, and what I have found is all truth is the same regardless. But I actually see that true spirituality puts the power of man's evolution in his own hands. And this evolution process does not need or depend on a church, a priest, or a guru for any initiation. In other words, that we have it within our own hands to evolve spiritually, if we're willing to do the work.
I knew I was going to love you. The thing for me is my path has been through a book called A Course in Miracles. It's actually three books, and it talks about the divisiveness that the ego creates. And it's like how we put people in pods, I call them. And it's like we'll say, and the differentiation we make between our cultures, between our ethnicity. And there's a real catchphrase that I try to avoid, and that is as a. When I say as a psychologist, I have put up a little wall between you and I, because I've already told myself that communication with you is going to be more difficult than with somebody else, or easier. Either way, I've made it different. So when I say, well, as a woman, when I want to say that, I try to catch that and say, no, it's another child of God. Because that eliminates the boundary between our communication. So that thing about religion supports part of the division, I love that. I love that. And it's not just religion. It's all the other, the races and all the others. And Kristen, what do you think?
Well, I'm just thinking about all the talks that I've done with Christine on our show, where, you know, we're talking about unhealthy relationships amongst other people and what you need to do to that. Sometimes you need to close the door on those things in order to welcome in a lot of the good that's, you know, has been out there waiting to come into your life. And you have been the one that has been holding the door shut on it, because so much of your energy and your life has been taken up managing what's been an unhealthy relationship. So I think about those terms, you know, and those are very practical life skills, psychological terms. But when you add a layer of coming at it from the spirituality piece to it, it opens up another way of looking at all of those dynamics. So my curiosity, Christine, is how have you been able to navigate what you know in terms of psychology and the things that we've talked about, and then adding that spiritual layer on top of it in terms of looking at another human being that maybe isn't behaving in a way that's very healthy for you?
I try to meet people where I find them, and that's regardless of creed, color, religion. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Perhaps even with what I have said so far, I may have alienated myself from some of your listeners, because they might feel that I'm being disrespectful in what I've just said. But I'd like to sort of say, even if we are born into a religion, all religions have their limitations. So we must go through religion and transcend it into spirituality. And it's not the other way around. So in a way, what I'm saying is, what I have learned in my 60 years, which I have been consciously traveling since the age of 10. I'm 70 now. And I can actually say that I have learned for me, not for anybody else, that religion is nothing more than a vehicle for getting us to that place. Mm. But when it brings us to the door of arriving at spirituality, we have to get out of that vehicle. And we have to walk across that threshold alone and take full responsibility for ourselves. So we're not going to be able to blame a church, or we're not able to blame the priest if I'm falling out with the priest or I'm annoyed with the priest. That gives away the responsibility to somebody else. So actually to take ownership of your spirituality is actually a very responsible thing. It's not an easy thing. And spirituality is not a conversion. You don't have to give up your religion to have it, but you do have to go beyond it.
I love that. I'm going to quote something from A Course in Miracles, if you will indulge me, that ties into what you just said. And it says, I'm going to read it, actually. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. So to me, that takes responsibility to the next level, because what happens in my life, in my own way of saying what I just read, nothing happens to me. Everything happens for me. And when I can take responsibility for what's going on in my life and not blame culture or what I was taught in church or what I was taught anywhere, when I can say, okay, I have perceived things the way I needed to perceive them at the moment, but I can change that perception. That is incredible for me, and I think it's incredibly powerful. But the responsibility piece is big. In one of the 12-step books that I've read, it says, our inability to accept personal responsibility has caused most of our problems. So the responsibility piece is big.
Yes, I'd agree with that. And of course, we have to remember, as I'm coming forward, I suppose, identifying myself as a Roman Catholic, we have to remember that Christ was a Jew, and he meditated and became an enlightened being. So he too had to go beyond the religion of his birth. And by so doing, he awakened his divinity. And that is the call of spirituality, that we go beyond our dual, you know, our duality and become a non-dual being and touch our own divinity. So it's not something out there. It's not something that we, you know, we can't aspire to become.
Kristen, jump in here whenever you want.
No, you guys go ahead.
I know that for me, what I've come to believe about the Christ self is that his purpose was to show us who we are and what we are capable of. In his own words, he said, greater things than I shall you do. And I believe for myself that, like I said, his whole purpose was like, this is who you are. This is what you are. This power that you're saying is exclusive to me is not exclusive to me. You can do these things. And in that place, for me, he becomes like an elder brother that's showing me how to play baseball. And It's like, this is how you play, and this is what it is. And please, don't worship me. If you're going to worship something, worship what I teach. And that's what that whole piece is for me. Jesus dictated A Course in Miracles to a lady named Helen Schuckman. And I know, Christine, you told me Messenger the other day that you've never read A Course. But if you read that book, it is so incredibly obvious that that did not come from an everyday mind. So his ability to have peace amidst chaos, his ability to know love in the midst of fear, he was showing us what we can do. So there's my piece.
Okay.
I think sometimes for me, what I have found since I grew up in this more of these kinds of teachings, not from a young child, I was absolutely kept away from any kind of religion whatsoever. And then grew up starting at about age 12 into teachings more like A Course in Miracles and spirituality. So none of that ever freaked me out. I didn't have, actually what freaked me out was going to more traditional churches as an adult and looking around the room and going, what is going on here? This is supposed to be spiritual, because it was so foreign to me, the traditional church experience. But what I found for me is, as you study these kinds of principles and you are a seeker, I found that you just start embodying them. It's so part indoctrinated so much into how I think and how I move in the world and how I create things that I forget to think about what are the lessons from those teachings that taught me how I move about in the world today. And what's nice is right now I'm getting back to a place where I want to go back and read some of the things I had read so young. I want to go back and do something like A Course in Miracles, start doing that again, because I've forgotten the questions, but I definitely, they're so infused into how I behave and operate in the world that it's a wonderful thing to revisit and remember, oh, that's why I've made these choices in my life. That's why I've gone in this direction, because it just became a part of my being, like a walking prayer or a walking meditation. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I remember having an experience when I was about 10 years old, and going to Mass on Sunday was a big deal. And I remember the night before saying to my mother, I don't think I'll go to Mass tomorrow with Daddy. And she said, oh, why not? And I sort of said, well, you don't go, Mom. And she said, oh, excuse me, I do go. I go very early. And I said, oh. I said, well, can I come with you then to the early Mass? Now, I didn't even know what I was asking. And I don't know if she was lying to me. I'm not sure even now. But she said to me, well, we get up. You'll have to get up. It's almost in the night. And it'll be dark. I said, yeah, okay, I'd like that. So anyway, I got up at 5:30, went off to 6 o'clock Mass. And when I got to the church, the experience was totally different from any other experience of the church that I had ever had. For a start, it was only lit by candles, and it must have been wintertime because it was pitch dark, which was very intimate. There were not many people. If there were 20 people in the church, that was all there was. And you know, I just knew I had come home to something, but I didn't know what that something was. And after that, I said, that's it, Mom. I don't want to go to that full church anymore with kids running around and people being disrespectful. So I was one of those kids that really, I wanted the sacredness.
Yes.
And I understood that very young, even though I didn't have words for it. You know, so my little hands would be put together and I'd kneel and I'd stand up and genuflect at the right time. And all of that was to do with respect. And when I saw people not being respectful, like getting all dressed up and standing outside the church and gossiping, I just thought, no, that's not for me.
Yeah, I hear you. Oof.
Yeah, I remember I had a very powerful experience when I was 18. I was going to a Baptist church in Kentucky. And I started going to church right after I got out of reform school, which is basically a penitentiary for teenagers. And because I was doing so well, I became like the poster child for the church. Oh, look what God can do and yada, yada, yada. And the minister, the preacher, kind of took me under his wing and answered all my questions. But one Sunday, he kept us over, the whole congregation, talking about God's unconditional love for us. And I was so, quote unquote, filled with the Spirit, and I was excited, and I was in love with the whole idea. And simultaneously, I was about to enroll in a Baptist Bible college to become a preacher. But the very next Sunday, he held us over talking about how we were going to die and go to hell if we didn't do certain things.
Yeah.
And because I was the poster child, every Sunday, you know, you walk out the church and the preacher's standing at the back door and he's shaking everybody's hand. And because I was the poster child, he always made it a point to ask me what I thought about the service. Well, on the second Sunday, I was heartbroken. And I'm walking out and he says, well, Johnny, what'd you think about today's service? Now, I've got a whole line of people behind me that are wanting to go get their lunch because they've been held over. And I said, Brother Glenn, I was really hoping you wouldn't ask me that today. He said, well, why? I said, because today's service was a total contradiction of last Sunday's service. And he said, no, it wasn't. I said, yeah, it was. I said, last Sunday you told me how God loved me unconditionally, and today you told me about all his conditions. I said, that doesn't make sense to me. He said, well, those aren't conditions. I said, Brother Glenn, you can color that whatever you want to, but when you tell me I have to do certain things to come to your house and have lunch, that's a condition. And that totally changed my life, because what I started investigating and finding out was there were a lot of things that I had been learning that were inconsistent with each other. And the God of my understanding today, if he is nothing else, he is consistent in his teachings. So unconditional love for me today means just that, unconditional love. I don't get punished. I don't get judged by my understanding of God. And one of the lines in A Course in Miracles was one of the ones that really grabbed me early on. It said, you need not ask God for forgiveness, for God has never condemned you. You have. And that just seemed so loving to me. And that was a very big point in my life. And it was a big turnaround, even though I ended up going down the road of alcoholism and drug addiction again after that. That always stayed with me. And I became, even though you couldn't see it in my life, I became committed to finding the truth. And the truth for me today is God does love me unconditionally.
And of course, what you're talking about really is you're talking about Christ spoke of God as Abba, Abba meaning Father, where the Jewish faith which he came from spoke of God as Yahweh, who was revengeful. And I mean, an awful lot of religions today even work out of that. And, you know, sadly, how many wars today are raged in the name of religion?
Mm-hmm.
And becoming a major feature in historical conflicts, and most recently in modern terrorism.
Wow. Well, that ties into, you don't have to forgive me for all the Course in Miracles quote, but it's the core of my being. And what you just said about vengeful, Jesus in A Course in Miracles says, takes that thing from the Bible where it says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And so many people I've known over the years, I've been like, I don't have to be vengeful. God's going to do it for me. Well, what Jesus says is that was totally misunderstood. That what he was saying is, vengeance is his because he will take it from us because it has no place in our heart. It's not saying that he will be vengeful for us. It's saying he will take it from us, which means he is not a vengeful creator. That opened the door for me to turn to him better. I grew up around the Baptist faith, and people told me when my mom died when I was 5 that God had taken her. And then they would turn around and tell me that I needed to turn to him for help. And I'm like, why? He took my mom.
Right.
I have a totally different understanding of that today, a totally different understanding of that today. And I don't have to be afraid, because here's the thing about that vengeful thing. If he's going to be vengeful for me against you, he's going to be vengeful to me for you. So that's a circular thing, but it's eliminated from my belief system today. I don't have to feel like God is out to get me or that he's going to get me. He's just there to love and support me. And even my mistakes, even my warts, he loves it all.
Well, I had a rude awakening at some point, like yourself. I had a rude awakening when I started to question the whole thing of, I didn't find that the Catholic Church was woman-friendly. I actually questioned, why would I want to be a member of a club that doesn't accept me as an equal, who won't allow me to live through the sacraments? Now, I didn't have that language at the time. I was maybe 12, but I was questioning very, very young. But so I kind of got a little bit turned on to atheism for a while,
mm-hmm.
until I discovered that even atheism was imposing religion in a kind of a way through, you know, Stalin and Mao Zedong and Pol Pot, in a way that they were imposing a state of religion on atheism, that I felt. And so I thought, oh, that's all a bit mad as well. So then I decided, right, I have to find my own way. And I remember watching a television program, and it must have been the first you know, we didn't have television when I was a child. So it was one of the first programs on television. And I saw a documentary about tribal people. I don't even remember what tribe they were. And I remember, I should be there. I understand what they're doing. I understand their spirituality. Now, and I was quite young at that point.
You know what that makes me think of, Christine, is when I was living in the Bible Belt, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to my mother who said, I am not going to take her to any church because she had such a horrible upbringing around religion. They were not, and I'm not saying anything negative about Christian Scientists and so on. We know now the dynamic of it. It was completely used in order to manipulate control of the family and so on. So we understand that. So I'm not saying anything negative about that particular belief, but it was so traumatic for her that she was like, I'm not going to impose anything on my daughter. My daughter will grow into figuring out what it is that she is going to believe in. And so, of course, that just made me a seeker. And when I moved to the Bible Belt, and, you know, nothing against those religions either, but what I just was constantly questioning. Someone would say, you know, this is the only way. This is the only way to believe. This is the one truth. And that truth is that you have to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior and, you know, all the dogma that goes around that. And I would say, wait a minute. Okay, wait a minute. So there's a tribe of Aborigines in the middle of Australia that have never met anyone, or nor will they meet anyone, that believes in Jesus. They don't even know who Jesus is. And what you're telling, and they live a peaceful, beautiful existence in tune with nature, loving, you know, and it doesn't need to be Aborigine. It could be anything, but they've never heard anything about Christianity. And what you're saying to me is that if they don't accept Jesus and get saved, quote unquote, before they die, that they're going to go to hell. How does that make sense? Is there just those kinds of things? I would sit back and go, that doesn't. And this other thing I thought was funny, you know, out of the mouths of babes, my son is very practical like me about certain things. And I took him to that same church that we were having this argument with. And he went to his first Sunday school class, and he was about six. And he's very much a smart aleck. Of course, he's my kid. He walks up to me and he goes, after Sunday school, he walks up and he goes, yeah, good job, Mom. They just told me I was born a sinner. Good job. Good teaching for your six-year-old. And I was like, I said, babe, I'm sorry, and we're out of here. But, you know, so just a lot of things, I think because I didn't grow up in it, I could look at it from this perspective of just, what? What are you saying? That doesn't make any sense to me that this is the dogma that you're putting on people. I just don't believe that that is true. And I think that that was such a good protection for me. And I think some of the things that have happened in my life that have been very, very painful, and Christine, you know many of it. Of course, those were things I needed to work out. Of course, those were things that were part of my journey. But all that it's done, all of these quote unquote tragedies have made me have such the contrast of what living a loving, caring, giving life and being of service, which to me is the closest to, you know, the God of your understanding you can be, is being of service to others and yourself, of course. But all of that contrast and negativity and toxicity that happened before that I was fully a participant in is what makes me, the moving through it was were the lessons I needed to learn on my journey in order for me to really love and appreciate how life always works out in my favor. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I could go off on a rant about some of what you just brought up because it's so big for me, because I was taught that if you didn't accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, that of course you were going to die and go to hell. And I have learned that what I need to accept is his teachings. And that thing about the people, the Aborigines and all of this that never hear the word, I was also told that you have to be very specific about what you pray, because if you pray it wrong, you're going to get it wrong. And my thing always when I heard that was, well, what about the deaf mute? He doesn't know our language. How does he know what to ask?
Exactly.
So you're telling me that because he's a deaf mute that he's not going to get to be with God in the end? I'm like, no.
Right.
And for me, that just does not make sense. And I needed it to make sense. So for me today, my belief makes sense for me. I love that Christine said a couple things when she said she emphasized for me. And one of the things I've come across in my path is that, you know, there isn't really a right or wrong. There's just a right and a not right for me. And some of those things I was taught as a child just aren't right for me today. Doesn't mean they're wrong for whoever else is believing them. It just means it's not right for me.
That's true. And I have to laugh at the journey I've been sent on at times. And one of the funniest things that happened to me, really, although it wasn't really funny, was that I thought I was doing a degree in pure psychology. And it turned out I was doing a degree in theology and psychology. And I would never have picked that in a million years. It wouldn't have even have entered my head. But I can remember on one occasion we were having a lecture, and it was on the Holy Spirit. And I have to say, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant lecture. And at the he finished, and I'm looking there, and I'm doing what I normally do. I'm trying to filter what is I've just heard. And he looks at me, and he says to me, "Christine, you look like you've got a question." Now, I didn't. I was only processing. And he said, "Would you mind telling?" I said, well, I was just wondering, if I were a little man or woman on the top of the mountain and I'd never heard of the Holy Spirit, what would I call it? Would I call it the Great Spirit? Would I call it the latent powers of the mind? What would I call it? The room went silent. And he literally went back on his heels. He collected up his books and he walked out of the room. And I felt where it threw me was I went into great shame. I felt I'd done something wrong. I thought I didn't get the point of something. I'd done something wrong. That was what I felt. So I quickly, kind of in my shame, get my books together to leave as well. And people in the class ran after me. And they're roaring laughing. Now, I'm not laughing. I'm nearer to tears. And they say to me, "Christine, you know, you're really funny, Christine. You dare to say the things we're thinking but wouldn't dare say." And that wasn't what I was trying to do at all. But about 3 or 4 days later, I had that same tutor again. So I went in, slinked in, sat down. He came into the hall and he went up to the podium and he called me up to the podium. So I thought, oh, God. So I went up to him. And he said to me, "Give the man his due." I mean, he was very humble. He said, "Christine, please keep asking your questions. You've no idea what you're doing to us in here. Normally, I teach seminarians who don't question anything." Mm. And he said, "I know you're not trying to make trouble. I know you're seeking and you're searching." And he said, "I couldn't answer you the other day. I just couldn't answer you. I didn't know what to say." And I just thought, wasn't that big of the man to give that back?
Wow, yes.
Yeah, that was humble. That was the epitome of humble.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, I think what I find interesting on our journey as seekers is I don't always know, and I know many people don't, but when you have a dogma in front of you that gives you the recipe of how you're supposed to live your life, you can easily go to that book, whatever it may be, and go, yes, I'm supposed to do this and I'm supposed to do that. And I think many people feel like that's some kind of safety. And to me, I don't live that way. I don't go to a book, a religious text and say, oh, okay, it's step one, I behave this way. Step two, oh, I behave that way. I read many different things and I feel like life is in that way is very fluid. I don't have all of the answers to something. I may sound completely ignorant. I mean, even at the beginning of this talk, I was thinking, I don't know what to say. I don't know what I have to add, although I don't feel like I don't belong in this conversation that we're all having. But this particular conversation with the two of you is very much like how I move about in the world of my life. I don't know. I don't know a lot. I don't know what I don't know. And for me, spirituality, now I can answer that question, is the more I accept that I really don't know, and that that's okay, and that that is the fun and the spirit of life, is being okay in the not knowing. To me, that's spirituality.
Yeah, and to me, not knowing is makes life an adventure.
Yes.
Because once I lock myself in to like, this is it, I've totally shut the door on learning something that I can add to it.
Absolutely.
And one of the lines in A Course in Miracles, as I say, I'm going to keep quoting it, but it says, the essential thing to learning anything is to first know that you do not know.
Mm.
Because as soon as I say I know, you can't tell me anything else. I've totally closed that door. And a friend of mine in the 12-step rooms, and I love this, he used to say every time he shared, which was almost every time I was in a room with him, blessed are the flexible, for they never get bent out of shape. And as long as I can be flexible, even with my belief system, I can listen to you two ladies or somebody on one of my other shows, and I don't have to be in that place of like, okay, I'm the guy doing the podcast. I'm supposed to know. Crap, I know I'm not supposed to know, and I don't ever want to think I'm supposed to know. So that not knowing is huge for me. And there's so many places in a book where it talks about not knowing and how important it is. So I totally agree with you, Chris. And I've got to live in the space. And I try to always remind myself and to be open to the idea that I could be wrong about all of this. I could be wrong about all of it.
Right.
Right now, it just feels right for me right now. And that could all change tomorrow.
Absolutely. And, you know, as part of my master's degree in medical anthropology, I had to go and live in the field with shamans and learn how they conducted therapies from their culture. And it was a fascinating experience, a wonderful freeing experience. And it brought me back to the time when I was 10-year-old, knowing that I needed to be with tribal people. And of course, I come from a tribal people. Celts were tribal people, really. With Christianity taken away our wonderful spirituality, to be honest. But I remember sitting with this Indian one night, and he talked about the four enemies of any man of knowledge. Because what we're all talking about here is we're on a journey of knowledge, three of us here in this conversation. And he's talked about the man or woman of knowledge has got four enemies. I thought, oh, really? Hmm. And have you heard that?
No. Tell.
Okay, well, the four enemies, they don't have to be necessarily in any order, but the four enemies are fear. So your fear, we will get fearful and we will stop the journey. We'll run. It gets too much. Power. We can become so powerful thinking we know it all that actually the minute we do that, actually, the power seduces us and takes us away from our center completely. The third one, which touches into what you were just saying there, Johnny, a moment ago, is clarity. And I thought, clarity, now where could that be an enemy? Because that one, the others I understood, but clarity, I couldn't fit that one in. And the whole thing was, he was saying is, in our search, when we seek and we find clarity. But we make the mistake of sitting in the clarity for too long. We must only sit in the clarity for a moment, then move on further with our search. And if you don't do that, your journey has ended. You'll stop at that point. Mm. So clarity becomes an enemy in that way. Isn't that brilliant?
It's brilliant. Incredibly
brilliant.
Yeah. And then the fourth one, the fourth enemy will get you, I'm afraid. It's going to get you. It's old age. But what it's going to get you in the end. But the tribal people say, but you don't make it easy. You keep working it and working it till the day you die, till the minute you die. You keep seeking and you keep searching. So don't say, oh, because I'm 65 and retirement age, I have to retire. You do not retire till you take your last breath.
That's brilliant. And, you know, this weekend we're celebrating, it would have been my adoptive father's birthday. And it's also the weekend 3 years ago where we held his memorial service. And that was one of the, so I'm, you know, I'm very emotional, obviously, in this loving celebration. And that was one of the things that I loved about him, just this constant seeking of knowledge and understanding. And I had the privilege to be holding his hand when he took his last breath. And I remembered thinking, you know, my whole attitude around death changed in that moment. Whatever it was, I completely lost all fear of that happening. And of course, the different healers that I've worked with, Christine, you know, I've talked about Martha, and you're my Irish Martha, but the healer Martha Jankowski that I work with, working with her around this as well, I really don't have this fear of death. I really do believe that when we leave this particular experience of being Kristen, I'm going on to another journey. And for a time, I'm going to be in someplace beautiful where I have met people, where you too are part of this world that is not of the human experience. And we're up there creating different things, doing work that you can't see as a human being, and that we choose to come here into this human experience in order for our soul to grow. And that this place in human form is fraught with pain. It's fraught with danger. It's fraught with those four enemies that you're talking about. But we chose to come here and experience this because that is part of the epic journey of the soul. Our soul chose, I'm going to be Kristen. I'm going to have what happened to her with her father, my biological father. I'm going to have all of those experiences because that is an agreement I made before I chose this experience, because those were the things that were going to push my soul to do its greatest work. And sometimes I say those things to people and they're used to me talking business or talking this or that. And I think, yeah, maybe I'm not going to share that particular thought with these people because they'll look at me like I have three heads. But that is what I absolutely believe. And that has given me such a measure of peace about what death really is, about what living really is, about what a forgiveness of myself, of shame I've carried, of anger at what people have done to me. It's made it such a more exciting journey to keep doing what I'm doing, because there really aren't any mistakes.
Well, I'm going to say ditto, because I believe every bit of that. And I'm going to say, I think it's important for me to put things in pictures where I can see my thoughts. And I think of this Johnny Calloway body that we identify as me is not me. Right. It's like, and for me to say it is me, it's like saying that my Kia that I drive around is me, because I'm not my car. And there comes a time when I trade in my car. And I think of this experience that I'm having right now. And before I came here, it's like I chose which university I wanted to go to.
Right.
And when I got to the university, I got to choose what my major was going to be. So at some point, I say, okay, you know what? I've learned all I need to learn from the Johnny Calloway experience. I want to go to another class now.
Yeah.
And that is incredible. And I just want to say, oh my God, I'm watching this clock, which is part of my job. And I almost want to apologize that our time is pretty close to up. So I'm going to ask Christine for a closing thought, and then I'm going to say goodbye to our listeners. But this has been an incredible conversation, which I knew it was going to be before we started. So Christine, you want to give us a closing thought?
Okay. Well, I suppose I would be guided by the principle that we are spiritual beings having a human experience and not the other way around. And that made me then, that realization sent me on a journey to ask, what's the point of spirituality? There has to be a point to it. So I have gone on that journey and I have got answers that fit okay with me, but I'm still on that journey. So for me, it is about returning to that place as I was as a spiritual being when I came into here and then grew my humanness and my ego. And now I have to get beyond the ego and transcend that in order to get back towards my spiritual self, my yeah, my spiritual being. And so that is the journey that I'm battling with every day. I don't know how well I'm doing, but at least I'm not idling.
No way. Christine Louis de Canneville and idle do not fit in the same sentence.
Right. It would be a wonderful interview to actually explore what is the point of spirituality at some time.
Ooh,
I'm so golly. Glad you mentioned next time, because I definitely want to continue this conversation at some point, because there's so much more that could be disclosed that I believe would be helpful to our listeners. But for now, I got to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I want to thank everyone that's been listening. And Christine and Kristen, you made for a great conversation, and I hope we continue to have these.
Thank you, Johnny. It was wonderful.
Thanks, Johnny.
Okay, thanks, everybody, and I hope you enjoyed our show. Have a great day. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.